Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, this is Erica Ramirez, senior editor at Billboard, and with me today I got some special guests, BJ the Chicago Kid.
What's going on?
And that's a very, nice one. I got Kalani.
Hi.
And my coworker, Stephen Horowitz.
Hey.
So I just wanted to bring you guys, it's CMJ week, and you guys have been performing. I know you guys both performed last night, Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. How were you guys' shows? Was this your first New York show, Kalani?
Yeah, this is my first show out of my state.
Wow. So how was that?
It was cool. It was really dope.
Yeah?
It was fun.
SOBs?
Yeah.
How was the crowd?
It was awesome. A lot of people came that I didn't expect to come, so it was just cool. I just came to support, so it was like, tight, you're here. That's awesome. It's great to see you. So it was cool.
How about you? Where did you perform at last night or on Wednesday night?
It was on Bleecker Street. I don't remember the name of the venue, honestly, y'all, I stay on the run, man. I'm moving so much. This is my third place today, and it ain't even 3 o'clock yet. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I stay on the grind.
That was probably your millionth show.
Maybe millionth and one, but I'm with it, though. This is part of the grind. I'm a politician right now. I'm winning everybody over. You know what I'm saying? Those that don't want to be one, you ain't just trying to get got. That's what it is.
Well, I wanted to talk to you guys about kind of your R&B influence, because both of you guys have done your covers, and you've sampled a couple people on this Cloud 19 mixtape. Mm. So I guess we could talk with you as far as, how that influence comes to be. How do you decide kind of what? You got Genuine sample on there. You got, a Montel Jordan sample on there.
Yeah.
He's a little Mary J. Blige, too, on the first track.
Yeah, he's
Mary J. Blige. Come on, bring that realness back.
Awesome.
So how big is, 90s? To me, that's, mostly strong 90s R&B. But how did that influence you?
I mean, it's all I listened to growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people where, I didn't get into current music until, right now. You could ask me what was going on the radio. Maybe, last year, I had no idea. I'm so stuck in, 2000s and beforehand.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what it is. And I was lucky, very lucky to find a producer that was his thing, was, flipping old school R&B. So we just, synced up and just started pumping out stuff, and we created my sound from that.
Yeah. I was introduced to you when we premiered the Marky Bassey song that you were on.
Yeah, Lock It Up.
And that also,
that's an Erykah Badu sample.
Exactly, that also samples Erykah Badu. So do you kind of stay within a crew that also are influenced by 90s R&B like you are?
Yeah, I mean, me and my producer linked up by total accident. I was working with somebody else at the same studio that he worked at, and he gave the guy a beat for me, and I had no idea it was his beat. But by the time I left, I was like, yo, this is my favorite song I've ever made. Mm-hmm. And then the guy's like, that guy made it. And I'm like, whoa, okay, let me talk to you. Yeah. And we linked up, and he just started sending me stuff. And the other day was the first time we ever made a record in the same room. Yeah. Until then, we just back and forth, because he's in New York and I'm in Cali. But I want him to do everything for me in the future. He's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
what about your influence, BJ? I know you came from church, so a lot of that is also heard in your music. What about 90s R&B or the R&B you listen to?
Yeah, it's crazy. I had to balance, though. I had church on Sundays, and I was on the block from Monday through Saturday. So like the D-boy on my block dropped me off to school the first time I remember the first time I actually ever heard Money Cash Hoes. I was getting dropped off to school, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's I had to balance no matter just living my life, I had the balance. My dad played me the Marvin Gaye's and all that, and hanging out with my homies, we heard the Skyface, the Money and the Power. People don't even know about that kind of hip-hop. So I actually had the rawest of that, and then I smoke herb to Willie Hutch and Marvin Gaye and Sam Cooke and all that. So it's If I come to a studio today and you sample a Marvin Gaye record, I probably live two lives on it, like the actual life of the record. Mm-hmm. And me, like, being young, understanding how samples are flipped and just how music is regenerated these days, I live two lifestyles and two lives in that one song. That's how I feel like I have an advantage in, you know, certain soulful records that just come my way, you know. So it's I try to use it to my advantage and really take advantage of the advantage, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like a commonality between you guys is that you're both, there's a lot of soul in your music, and I think you take a look at contemporary R&B and you see that there isn't really a lot of soul. It's kind of influenced by what's really hot in the club and kind of like the 808 sound. Yeah. So, I'm curious as to what kind of difficulties you guys have faced in trying to connect with audiences using that soul sound, if you guys have it all.
Mm. I mean, I can speak for myself. It's a battle, fighting for something that's not as popular as it was when you fell in love with it. But the coolest shit ain't the most popular shit in the world. So when everybody's not on your ship, you probably doing the right thing. And you probably, you know, having the best experience than everybody out there, you know what I'm saying, on the water. So I'm satisfied sometimes not being the most popular person in the world, because I still have the best life in the world. I wouldn't trade this for nothing, man. The experience I get, the knowledge I get, I've seen enough to let me know that I'm doing the right thing. If that's
what about you?
The best way for me to say.
Of course it's naturally gonna be something that's hard, because I'm 19 years old, you know, so my generation just wants to turn up. And when I first started making music, we're getting the, oh, we can't slap this. I can't slap this with my boys in the car. I can't listen to this in front of, my mom can listen to this, but I can't listen to this. I'm like, yo, if your mom like it, I'm down. You feel me? So just what I learned to do was kind of like realize where my age group is at right now. And they're kind of in this turn point where they're actually opening up more to really different things and opening up more to things that are more real and more authentic rather than just turn up, because I think turn up is actually digressing, you know? So, I just think if you do you and you're enjoying what you're doing and you're loving what you're doing, like he was saying, it doesn't matter. You know, real is always going to last. What's authentic is always going to last. It doesn't matter what's going on. So
I feel like nowadays, the weirder, the better.
Yeah.
In a sense, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys are also very, very strong on repping where you're from in your music.
Yeah.
It's not even like what you say, but also the producers, especially like the producers that you use, make sure that they're all like based in the place that you came from. Do you guys, is that now, has it become a conscious thing now? Because it feels like now it's just a natural thing, especially for you, BJ, to just incorporate that.
Yes and no. I'm BJ, the Chicago kid, so that defines my city. That defines where I'm from. I can let that be it, and I can't let that be it. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of talented producers that actually match my vibe from home, and that's who I work with.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at, man. Like, if you're not helping me grow, or you're not helping me, like, you know, rock where I'm at, it's not really my kind of thing right now. I'm in a steadfast mindset right now.
Yeah.
I'm just in a place where I only want to be with people that are growing or that are trying to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody under that, I can't really rock with. This industry and what we're fighting for and the things that we put up with, I feel like it's so crazy, and there's so many ups and downs, like, within seconds. Like, you have to stay around people that can consistently feed you, because this could be my day of giving up, and she could be like, BJ, you tripping. Like, listen to this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm inspired all over again. Like, I'm never, yeah. So you have to be around people that can consistently feed you. If not, like, you never know what this is really going to bring to you. This is the day of the unbelievable, man.
Well, so, you also kind of run deep with TDE. Like, you've been with, like, working with them for a minute. So do you kind of stick around with them also because of that? Because they kind of inspire them?
Man, iron sharp as iron, steel sharp as steel. I feel like the understanding we have just in life alone, we've had long before the past 3-4 years of the success. And, you know, much, much, much respect to the success that has come their way. But I feel like the understanding we've had has been long before that. That's why it's so easy for us to do it now that mm-hmm. the world is watching. But it's, you know, I'm very proud of those guys. I'm sure they're proud of what we're doing together and the things that's about to happen. So all I can say is stay tuned on that side of things. But,
yeah, I was going to ask, have you ever considered being a part of TDE?
If there were chains, I'm sure I would have a chain.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this was like the 90s, early 2000s. Like, yeah, if like there was a Rockefeller chain, I would have one. But, I mean, you know, it's family is family, you know. I never needed to, like, real family never needs Put like this. My cousin doesn't call me from the barbershop and say, man, they don't believe you my cousin. He never does that. He doesn't need validation from somebody else that hasn't been around. Yeah. Like, the real know the real, and that's what it is.
But I was thinking of you when, because I know Kendrick's album this time around is, from what I hear, it's a little bit more soulful, has a little bit more like R&B flavor to it. Are you trying to work with him on that? Because that seems like a natural fit.
I've worked on Kendrick's last two albums, just being an artist and understanding what it is to be disciplined in creating an album. Sometimes the best work that you actually like doesn't fit the actual, you know.
Yeah.
When you're disciplined to an actual project and a sound and an actual vision, you have to stay disciplined to that. And one of your favorite songs could not make the cut.
Right.
So, I mean, over the past album that he's done and the one he's recording now, we've probably done an album worth of material. Yeah, and that. But, you know, it happens, man. That's how His Pain came about and other songs we have. Just because we keep working and we don't worry about what's coming.
Yeah.
So when whatever's coming is ready for us, more or less than us being ready for it.
Yeah.
Kalani, I guess your association with Nick Cannon has probably been really influential on you too, because he's such a businessman and such a
I want to be around someone like Nick Cannon as far as he's, business.
Yeah, he's super.
He's super ambitious and super successful.
Yeah, so I mean, what kind of stuff are you learning from him and working with him and seeing how he kind of maneuvers in the game?
Well, Nick didn't approach me as a businessman. Nick approached me as a positive, like, male figure in my life as a young woman who doesn't have one. You know, so when he picked me up, it wasn't even damn near music related. It was, yo, you're a young girl who needs somewhere to be safe and be focused, so I'm going to put you in a place where you can be safe and be focused and help you grow. You know, I consider him more of my uncle and my mentor than this is my executive manager or this is my whatever, you know, because we don't even rock on a paperwork basis. We've been family for 2 years now, and I haven't had to touch anything, you know, just because we got each other like that. You know, so being around him, he tries to put me in as many situations where I can learn as possible, whether that's come sit in this meeting or let me talk to you about what I just did or let me let you know certain things that are not supposed to happen and that should happen and how to handle certain things. So he's a blessing. You know, it's a lot of learning. So,
yeah. I want to understand Pop Life. It feels, or what was the group name that you guys were on, America's?
Pop Life, yeah.
So they bring in different artists from time to time? How did the group work?
Well, what it was in the beginning, it was just our band. And I was in the eighth grade. And it was a cover band, and we rocked out for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
No, I never recorded my own music. It was just performance for like 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
So when the band split up, it was like a kind of a bad situation. So on the manager's part, it was more like, well, it don't matter who's in this band. It's still going to be a band regardless. So, you know, whoever, I'm pretty sure that the band changes like every couple months now just because of how fugazi the situation is. But luckily, everybody who was in the original Pop Life has moved on to something way better and a much more positive situation. So I actually have no idea what's going on with anything Pop Life related now.
So when you were out, you were like really
horrible.
What did you take away from that though? Was it more like discipline that you took from
the band or the show?
The band.
The band taught me everything I know. Before that, I was a dancer. You know, I wasn't trying to do music when I was in the eighth grade. I hardcore danced my whole life. You know, I wanted to go to Juilliard for ballet.
Yeah.
So when I got a knee injury and it was like, well, I can sing too, so let me just dive into that.
Yeah.
It was, and maybe 2 weeks into me joining the choir at school, I get the, you know, hey, were you trying to come audition for this band that we're trying to start? I'm like, what? I just really started singing like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
But okay, let's do it. And then we did it, and it taught me everything from being on stage to, it's a group of 16-year-olds, well, going from 13 to 16 years old, walking around being put into adult clubs at 13. Go on stage at 2 in the morning and go perform. It doesn't matter who's smoking weed right there, who drunk as hell. Go perform right now. We're 14, you know? It was just, it was us in a very, very adult world.
Mm-hmm.
So I consider everything I know right now about music industry, I got from that band. Even the negative things that went on in the band and how it ended and the reason it ended taught me what not to do in business now and signs to look out for and things like that. And I'm very grateful for everything that happened with the band, positive and negative, because it all taught me something. So
yeah, I can't imagine being at a club at 2 a.m. performing.
Yo, I had a 14 years old. I did had an anxiety attack and then performed.
I don't know how you. How
I
long
wish I had the balls at 14 to perform, y'all. Yeah. Yo, let me tell you, the first time I sang publicly, like outside of church, was at my 8th grade graduation, and I sang the same part over and over, and I was so nervous. Like it was like the record kept scratching, yo. And when I got off, my homies like, "You sound good, but dude, you kept singing the same shit all
night." That is hilarious. Funny.
So to even see you had the balls like that, even in that whole other atmosphere is insane. Yo.
Oh, it was so scary, but it was like, though, you know what? It came a point where our manager was really about tough love. So he was like, yo, you want to be in this industry? This is what this industry looks like. These niggas are professional performers. You're going to have to do this regardless of what age you are. Mm-hmm. You signed up for this. You want to do this. You got to do this now. So we did it. I just remember calling my auntie afterwards like, man, it was grown-ups drunk and they was smoking weed and blowing it in my face. And back then I was a lot more unexperienced with the world and a lot more square than I am now, obviously.
You're like 14. Of course.
But hey, when I hit 16, I became 21, I promise you. So it was this, at 14, it was like, I think 15, turning 16 was like the biggest, craziest switch. So 14, I was terrified. But by the time I was 16, I had the hang of it. So it was good.
So did you start working on solo stuff at like, when did you start working on solo stuff?
Last year.
So when you were 18?
17, turning 18.
And you put out a single, and then did you go straight into Cloud 19? I know you did like covers and kind of like loose tracks.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was actually stuck in a crazy contract situation that was telling me that I couldn't do anything musically until I turned 18. But what actually was the case was that contract said nothing of the sort. But when you have a family that doesn't know anything about the music industry and they're completely terrified about being sued because they have nothing, we're about to be like, hell no, you better not sing a damn line. We can't afford to get sued. And we don't know if they're telling the truth because we can't afford a lawyer to let us know. You know, so it was this period in time when I couldn't do anything musically related, like nothing. I was scared to step into the studio because someone was going to have my vocals from somewhere, you know. So after that, when I found out, because I was lucky enough to go, hey, you know, maybe somebody I can find legally will sit down and let me know what if this is real or not, found out it wasn't, dived right in, made my first single, put it out, and Nick Cannon hit me up after that. So
yeah, was that in connection to the band?
The single?
No, as far as like not being able to record.
Yeah, it was the contract I was in with the band. And
so you went years not thinking that you couldn't do anything.
No, I went about a good like 9 months.
Okay.
And I just went, I was like, you know what, maybe this is time for me to just go to high school and be a kid and like experience kid stuff, because I had missed out on my whole like school life due to music. But it was something, I don't want to be in school. I'm in L.A., on stage with Jamie Foxx, you feel me? I'm on stage with Stevie Wonder at the Conga Lounge, you feel me? Like, I'm not tripping. It was times we had to go do that, get on the road, drive 6 hours back to the Bay, and go right into class.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, maybe, you know, I can go to prom, and I can, like, make friends in high school, and I can get my credits up because I didn't go to school ever because of music. You know, so that I think that time period was needed also just to grow as a person, to be able to make the music I'm making now. I needed that nine-month period of, like, being frustrated and being angry and being confused and having to learn different ways to express that wasn't music.
Yeah.
So it definitely helped more than it hurt me.
What track did Nick Cannon hear? Is it the Raw and True track?
Anti-Summer Love was my first record that I ever put out.
Yeah.
And he heard that. He actually picked me up before that. He tried to put me in a rap group that just wasn't my thing because I'm not a rapper, you know. So I went back to Oakland respectfully and was like, you know, let me try to do my own thing now. Put out the song, and then he was like, yo, I get the vision now. I apologize. I get what we're trying to do. I rock with it. I fuck with it. Let's do it. That's good. He brought me back out, and then here we are.
That is one hell of a story. I'm still stuck at that 14 years old.
Yo, I'm sitting here intrigued. I'm watching it like, I want to ask you some questions. So how was it when you grew up?
BJ, go ahead.
I've lived a couple lifetimes in this music thing, and I'm still a new artist myself.
Yeah,
I feel you.
Yeah. And what's crazy is I all the time I look at the people that I admire, and I'm like, damn, they've done so much. And I look at myself, I ain't done shit compared.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
To that. But when people look at my life, they're like, oh, you done a little bit. Yeah. It's like, shit, but do you know who I'm looking at? I ain't did nothing and got so far to go.
It depends
on what
view you're looking from.
Yeah. And absolutely, I just want to give them greatness, period. Music is a big part of my life, but I'm really into movies, honestly. Mm-hmm. I could be inactive, but I'm more into writing movies. I feel like I write movies in 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes, 2.5 minute songs every fucking day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the visuals I see, that's what changed the game. Like, me understanding what detail is, me understanding the small things that separate the real from the rest.
Do you see yourself kind of doing that a little bit more?
Yeah. I directed my first video that's coming out on the newest project that I kind of co-directed the stuff that we kind of put out through BJTCK.com, Can't Hold My Liquor, and Real Love Never Die, and Perfect. I kind of like 50% of those ideas or more is my, it's my fingerprint. I'm just more into people knowing that they need to know that we actually are far more hands-on than just musically, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I just realized what you give them is what they have and what they see, and that's what they say. Mm-hmm. So if you give them more, they have more to say, they have more to rep, and they actually become fans for life, man. I want them buying, if it's a telephone with my name, I want them buying the phone and probably never use it, you know what I mean? I'm selling a real lifestyle of just straight, genuine, quality shit. You know what I'm saying? It's not about quantity. It's simply quality, man. Mm-hmm. I went 2.5+ without releasing new material after Pineapple. And Pineapple debuted number one, knocking Chris Brown off of number one at iTunes, and released that from my bedroom. Mm-hmm. That was from my bedroom. There was no office. There was no Motown or nothing. So it's like I said, we've seen enough to know, like, yo, that we doing the right thing. We just got to continue to steer this wheel in the right way and continue to drive this vehicle. But I've seen enough to know. And I've seen enough to know and to be comfortable being the only one believing some days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This is where I am, man. It's a lot going on, but it's a lot going on over here, too.
So what's going on with this album that you're working on now? Like, you seem to have had a lot happen between the last album and now. So what are you trying to incorporate from that into this album?
Pineapple was more of a soulful project. Mm-hmm. It was very well put together. This next project is pretty much, we linked incredible songs together to pretty much form this project. I've been working on the EP, a LP, and a free album at the same time. So, within 2.5 years.
Bonnie's clapping.
You can't see, but yeah, she's snapping her fingers over there.
In the midst of that, we kind of, we got everything accomplished. The free album will be coming out first.
Mm-hmm.
The EP will come out second, and the LP will come out next year. So,
why did you decide to do all of that at one time?
Because
or did you have some stuff as you like within?
Honestly, I didn't want to be caught up in the Pineapple sound. Mm. Everybody knows that my music is very soulful and I can do that, but I'm exposed to so much.
Yeah.
And I can do so much. I'm not saying try so much. I can really do so much, like I can do soul music, but like I said before, the only way you can know is if I show you the right way. So me understanding that listeners and supporters, they have it's a different kind of intake when it comes to music. So I want to give it to them in a way they can actually hold on to the music as long as they possibly can.
Yeah.
All of us have playlists in this room that it's songs in there we possibly forgot about, but there was some cold-ass songs in there.
Mm-hmm.
This day and age, the disposal of songs is the timeline is a lot shorter than before.
Yeah.
So me being a victim of that even, and me being a doer of that even with my, you know, what I'm a fan of, I'm using that to kind of do the homework of finding out the medium of feeding it to them in a way that they understand this is something that you really have for a lifetime, not just for a summer, not just for a season, not just for the next couple of years. This is something you can actually put on a shelf and you'd be mad you put it on a shelf when you grab it again. You know what I mean? Making timeless music. Simply that. Making timeless music.
So how are you kind of differentiating each one? Like, are you trying to place a theme so that you know
this? Well, this is an easy way to kind of explain it. Of course, I'm at Motown. The free album is carelessly, like, everything I pretty much put together on the free album, we're not caring about sample clearances. We're not caring about any of that. We're pretty much doing what we feel creatively and putting that out.
Mm-hmm.
that's simply on my own part. Motown has no fingerprint nowhere close to that. The EP, I feel like the EP is a sound that, because Pineapple was a soulful sound, the EP is a sound that pretty much grabs a much more younger crowd, the turn up crowd, pretty much, and it puts everybody in the room to pay attention to the LP.
Okay.
So it pretty much grabs this Pineapple crowd, the free album grabs this other crowd, and this EP grabs this other crowd to pay attention to everybody being in this one room for the big atom bomb, which is the LP. The LP is pretty much the soul story of my life and / the soundtrack of a lot of drug dealers of the streets. Yeah. Honestly, I hate to make it sound like that, but the way I can explain that for 2 seconds. I grew up around a lot of people that were just like the urban community, just like stuck in a trap, right? Mm-hmm. So, Monday through Friday, this guy's on the block, but he has a kid. His kid has a mother, and she has needs. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the needs for the child, whether it's personal needs, or whatever the case may be. This guy falls in love. This guy got to watch his back from the police. He got to watch his back from people trying to kill him. Like, just the whole aspect of the urban community of somebody that's actually a good individual, but he's trying to make the best of just a total fucked up situation.
Yeah. David Ali's right here is nodding his head yes.
That's the soundtrack of the LP.
We know who's buying the album. Pre-order
so,
right there.
I was saying, hello.
Yeah. Like I'll just give you an example.
One person at a time, right?
What's his name? It's a song on there called Each Day I Cry, right? It's on the LP. It's a song called Each Day I Cry. The song, I'm not singing till the end of the song, right? It's two verses, like a song is structured. Mm-hmm. It's a chorus, it's a hook. Mm-hmm. And it's a vamp. I don't sing to the vamp because I really want people to understand what I'm talking about on the song. So I didn't plan to not sing on the song. I literally walked in the booth, told him to cut the record on, and what came out, came out. It was a previous situation I had with an ex-girlfriend of mine. She was pregnant with my child. She lost the baby, to make a long story short, but that's what I talked about on Each Day I Cry. Mm-hmm. Because I got the news that she would not be able to have that baby on the plane on my first day heading on the tour. So imagine getting on a plane, you click your seatbelt, and they're like, sir, you need to get off your phone. And she's like, I'm at the hospital. When they tell me, she's telling me that in this instant.
Right.
I had to deal with that.
Yeah.
So for me to have to leave town and she have to deal with this whole thing by herself, and I actually could not get back because I still had to pay for the whole everything, mm-hmm. because we didn't have, yeah, from the hood, we didn't have insurance like that.
Right.
So, and it means all of that, I pretty much still had to swallow that situation, and she felt like I didn't take it like she took it and things like that because she wasn't physically able to see me deal with it.
Right.
But she didn't know, like, Father's Day was 3 days after that, and bah, she's supposed to have my child. I'm crying my eyes out in soundcheck. I'm on tour with Anthony Hamilton. Nobody know. Anthony didn't know that she lost the baby at that time. Mm-hmm. They just see me walking out of soundcheck. I'm cool. I had to put the towel over my head and just calmly walk out. But when I had my own 5 seconds, I had to get it out.
Yeah,
because it was real. Like people don't know that type of stuff affects you. So what other way to deliver that stuff than in your music? So I feel like songs like that is what really connect to somebody else, because somebody else experienced that same thing, but because everybody talk about the same thing, nobody has a voice to speak for that particular situation. There's another song called Stuck in July. This guy's pretty much telling this girl, no matter what time it is outside, with you, I'm stuck in July. With you, it's fireworks all the time. Through our arguments and all of that, I understand what it really is, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm sticking with. But the video concept, this guy's going to see her in jail. She's locked up. So how you feel like seeing a thorough guy with, and you can tell he's thorough from what he's wearing, how he's walking, the way he hop out of you. Like, this is a cool guy. And you mm-hmm. see him actually supporting her through her ordeal. You never know what made, mm-hmm. you know, her be behind bars. But the fact that this guy is having somebody speak for his voice from his point of view, I feel like that's what BJ to Chicago represents, the opposite side. I am the balance of this shit. You know what I'm saying?
And these tracks are on the album?
Each Day I Cry is on the album. Stuck in July will be on the EP.
So when are these coming out, now that you've talked about these songs and I want to hear them right now?
Okay. Right now. Okay, so let me give you a small, quick example of a song that's coming out on the project that's coming out next week.
Okay.
All right? So Real Love Never Died, we already released it on bjtck.com, but I wrote that about I just believe real love never dies. Like, when you really love someone, I don't give a fuck who you be with, it's still some type of love for that person. Mm-hmm. You could possibly not even want to tell your mate. You probably take that to your grave.
You're making me sad.
Listen,
I'm happy at the same time. Me too, I'm going through it right now.
Yeah, everybody's mad, Emo. You have
to
be
I'm trying
careful.
To tell y'all. Real love never dies, yo. Real love never dies. And I believe in
both
that.
Both of y'all, I'm like in the middle.
So I took King Heroin, the instrumental from James Brown, and that's what I pretty much did. So that was one of the first times I ever recorded myself fully on Logic. So I engineered that that track. And Real Love Never Dies comes out on the Mafi Project. The Mafi stands for Music Ain't For Everybody. That's my crew. We've been repping for years, but this is the first time that I actually felt like I could actually use this name and like utilize it in a way for the world to really understand in a free project.
Because you have this platform.
Yeah, and too, it's free. Like sometimes, you know, charging people just give them an excuse not to get it. Or not to get it on time.
Is this for the EP or for the
Free album. Yes, for the free album. We're going to be releasing next week, so it's going to be on and popping, man.
What about the other projects? I want to know about the other projects. So you got the look.
So you got the free album again.
Okay.
You got the free album.
Uh-huh.
You got the EP. And you got the LP.
So are the EP and LP coming out this year?
Next year. I'm going to give you out a free album. We're going to work this free album pretty much for the rest of the year. Okay. I released the Christmas album that last year that I did. I'm probably going to do a residency in LA. I'm thinking about doing that for a couple weeks during the Christmas holiday just to have a little fun and just maybe perform the whole Christmas album. It was only like 6 or 7 songs. But just a lot of fun things that we can do because we never stop working, you know?
Yeah. Is your next album going to make me cry also? Or
Did the first one make you cry?
It was emo, but it made me happy. It was like,
The thing is, right now, I feel like my generation is, like, really obsessed with fake depression. Like, everybody just, they love to be sad and they love exploiting it. Yeah. And I'm the type of person, I really believe if you're honestly that sad, you're not walking around yelling about it.
Right.
You know, everybody who's really going through it is going through it and they're in it. Going through it. You know, they're not like, hey, Twitter, hey, Instagram, I had a horrible day. My life is shitty. I'm hella sad. I'm emotional. You know? So I tried to make a project that was very light and happy and warm and had a glow to it, you know, and I think I accomplished that because every song on there is light, you know. I tried to stay away from any crazy ballads. I tried to stay away from talking too much about the negative things that happened in my life because I'm saving that for my album. This was just an introduction to, this was my first project. It was my first mixtape as a solo artist. People didn't know what to expect from me, but I'm like, you guys, I'm just going to give you a collection of really good R&B songs that make you feel good and that you can take back to school with you. Yeah. You know, because I put it out the end of summer. I was like, I want them to go into school rocking, you know. So I want to drop another mixtape and then an album. And I think my next mixtape is going to be a lot more, it's going to be less structured, you know, less typical R&B. I want it to be more just feels and get a bunch of other sounds in there. I want to bring in a lot more people. I want maybe 5 to 6 people to touch one track, you know, just to add different things, to add different layers and whatnot. Yeah, you know, I want to do a bunch of stuff. And I think because I'm also a writer and I've gotten really serious with writing the past maybe like 5 months, you know, I've touched every type of music and I've learned to how to write and to put my style into every genre of music. So the next one's just going to be more about feel and kind of getting to know me a little bit more. Then the album is going to be a real introduction to, you're going to know how I grew up and things that I went through that aren't just having to do with love, because Cloud 19 is 8 love songs,
right?
Yeah.
You know, it's love songs. I mean, and even the songs before that was love songs. I make love songs, you know, but I'm just realizing that that's not the only thing that's ever went on in my life, you know. You don't start falling in love till what? Maybe late teenagers, you know, real to be able to.
Or you get bit by that bug. When you get bit, that's what it is.
And then I have everything from before the age of 12 to talk about. You know, that I haven't even touched, that people don't even know about except for when I do deep interviews. Right. You know, so my next album probably might make you cry. You know, just a little bit. I got some ballads set to the side for that. Some touching things that when certain people hear them are about to be like, okay, yeah. Like family members, like, you talked about it. Is we bringing it out to the world now? I think it's time, you know, it's time for people to get a little bit more insight on who I am, especially because I don't look anything like what I sound like. So people are often confused. You know, like, you look really rough, and you're from Oakland, and, like, you always talk about you on Twitter, like, you did this, and my music video is, my first music video, Kehlani and Clyde, is based on my parents, you know, and it's a love story about a man and a woman. They rob a house, the man gets shot in the robbery, and the woman goes to jail, you know, so I have many things to talk about from the aspect of where I'm from, because I haven't touched on it. You know, I'm from the Bay, but it's because I've kept the Bay sound, but I haven't talked specifically about the Bay or what I've done there. You know, so my next projects will just be getting to know me.
So when am I going to cry? When are you going to put out?
Well, I wanted to do a Christmas project because I feel like that's everybody's, like, every R&B singer's, like, soft spot is Christmas music, because it's, like, good-ass music.
Or just doing it your way. Like, I made, like, R&B Christmas songs.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I told the girl, I was going to have fun.
The only thing I want for Christmas is you. Like, I had fun with it. I made it young.
You, baby.
And then I gave them some classic stuff, you know. But, yeah, it is every singer's.
It's like our soft spot, yeah.
Especially to create your own kind of Christmas music, right. You know.
So you want to try to do a Christmas.
I wanted to, but I felt like Cloud 19 isn't done doing what it's had to do yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the fact that every time I get on a social network or every time I meet somebody, they just heard about it and they're like, yo, I can't even believe I was asleep. Yeah. And you only dropped this a month ago. Like, the fact that every day it's new people that are like, yo, this is crazy. I'm hopping on it. Let me put somebody else on it. Yeah. Y'all keep rocking with that. You know, keep enjoying it. Keep loving it. There's people that tell me that they've listened to it every single morning when they wake up since it dropped. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just want to let it grow a little bit more, and then hopefully I think I would be my idea to have another mixtape out by February, mm-hmm. around Valentine's Day, you know.
Y'all kill me. You're going to kill
me. You know, I'm a softy. I look rough.
The rest of the year is going to be that.
I look rough, but I'm a softy.
It's funny that you say that people see you and they think that you know.
They're so confused. The reactions I get are hilarious.
To be honest, that was my reaction too. I haven't seen you before, but I've listened to your music. And, like, you just took your sweater off. You're covered in tattoos. And, like, you got a Lauryn Hill tattoo, which, like, I want one of those.
Everybody should get one. You know how many friends I make off this tattoo? They're like, yo, you must be the truth. You got to be the truth. Let's be friends. I'm like,
Lauryn
all
Hill
right.
Lauryn Hill is the truth. Everybody, I mean, you could tell a good person by whether or not they like Lauryn Hill. So.
Right. If you don't like Lauryn Hill, I dang near can't fucks with you. Yeah. Like,
honestly, though, I love your gangster, man.
Thank you.
I just met you today, but just hearing you talk is
real.
When this collaboration happens,
when this collaboration happens, it happens.
I respect the gangster for real, because honestly, the only way, and this has nothing to do with your age, but the only way anyone is mature to some degree is being around people that are like 2-3 times, 4 times more mature. So I respect it, like, beyond. Because this industry, it calls for that. Otherwise, this shit can, like, bang you up. Mm-hmm. This shit can, like, send you home bruised, black eye, bloody, all of that. And some days, it's naturally going to be that. Mm-hmm. But not being ready for it could give you, like, 10 times more of the bruises, 10 times more bloodshed and all of that. So I totally respect your gangster, man.
Thank you.
You definitely got me, man.
Much appreciated. Yay, turn up, because I've been a fan.
Oh, there goes Steve. That means I got it good.
No, I guess it's a good time to wrap that up.
That's a good spot.
So I appreciate you guys coming through.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having us.